Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Alpha's Magic by Shannon West. Narrated by Gabriel McKnight. Prologue. Bansheera, also known as Leo. I woke up in the dark with the sense that something was coming for me. Something big. Not big like one of those enormous old oak trees in the forest whose limbs grow so heavy they have to lay them on the ground. Not even one of those massive waves that sometimes sweep in and destroy everything in their path. But big all the same. Important and life-changing. And coming straight for me. When it arrived, I knew my whole life was going to be different. I didn't know how I was so sure of it. I'd given up on trying to understand things like that a long time ago, but I knew just the same. Maybe the absolute fucker who had taken everything away from me had left me some of my magic, which used to sing inside me like one of the tunes my mother used to play on her pianoforte. I hadn't tried to access any of my magic in a long time, being too steeped in misery after the warlock finished with me. And too traumatized and horrified by what she'd made me into to even try and find its hiding place. I remember reaching for it once, right after I changed, flailing for it, desperate for it to save me. But it shied away from me, like a skittish pony, dodging past my hand when I reached for it, as if trying to escape from a burning barn and save itself. It was possible there were a few small scraps of it still left inside me. Not quite seared away by the Dark Witch's terrible spell, fallen behind the door of my mind and almost forgotten in the general wrecking ball disaster the horrible woman had made of me, of my body, and my mind, and my entire life. Tiny scraps of magic remained inside me, little charms fixed in my mind and infused with just enough magic to produce some small effect over and over without any real thought or effort. They would have been left behind inadvertently, of course. She wouldn't have meant to do me any kindness, however random or insignificant. But somehow, as she yanked my whole life out from under my feet like a cheap scatter rug and tore away everything I ever was, even my humanity, she'd somehow overlooked my ability to call on my magic. Or maybe she hadn't overlooked anything. Maybe the evil Herodin wanted me to know it was still inside me, though mostly useless to me in the face of her terrible spell. Maybe she relished the idea of me retaining a bit of precognition so I could know what was coming for me and dread it, afraid that her evil dark magic had conjured up some fresh new hell. It would be one more little torture to inflict upon me. As if she hadn't done enough already. Did she really think I feared death? After all that she'd done to me? Ha! I hoped for it, prayed for it, longed for it year after year. But it had always stayed tantalizingly, mockingly, just out of reach, jeering at me and skittering back if I came too close to it. My knowledge of coming events wasn't usually clear, and it didn't always happen. The gods knew I hadn't seen the evil witch coming. If I had, I would have killed myself to avoid this thing she had made me. But sometimes, I still had feelings about upcoming events in my life, and this one was one of those times, and it was strong. Whatever was coming for me was hurtling toward me like a falling comet, or like a rock in a landslide, wild and dangerous and totally out of control. I had hung breathless on the possibility of death before, but it had never quite materialized. Maybe now it was finally coming true. Death and the end of everything the warlock had done to me. At long last. A boy could hope, anyway. As soon as it was light enough outside, I went out into the cool gray dawn and looked up at the sky to see if I could actually see something headed toward shore. Maybe there was a big bad storm on the horizon to account for this awful unsettling feeling inside me. Or maybe there was really some kind of huge comet heading straight for us, its trail stretching behind it like the tail of a fiery kite, ready and willing to wipe out all of humanity and usher in another ice age. But there was nothing there but the sea and the sky, one as gray, blue, and serene as the other. It was actually kind of anticlimactic. All that serenity was just a lie, of course. I was living proof that everything could change on a dime. Not only that, the sea could be calm and beautiful one minute, and then hurl hurricanes and gale-force winds at us the next, daring us to try and survive them. If there was one thing I knew for sure, it was that anything could happen out of the blue, and frequently did. Grimora was late in returning, and that worried me. He should have been back at the cave by now. He made these monthly visits to the village for supplies, and I'd always thought these trips far too dangerous, but I could never talk him out of them. Sometimes he let me go with him, wearing my hooded robe to hide my face from the villagers. They knew what I was, but they'd rarely had an up-close look. He needed to go, he said, to get the materials for his tisanes and potions. Plus, he said, he needed to pick up some of the tinned peaches that he knew I liked. But the supplies were heavy, and he was getting much too old to make the journey alone. It was no secret among the villagers that he lived with me here in what they called Bansheera's cave. That alone was enough to condemn him, and so I worried about him every time he went until he safely returned. Since the feeling I'd had in the night was so strong, I stayed outside the cave and paced up and down, peering into the distance and hoping to see him coming. I was far too restless to go back inside. I worried about him for a long time that morning, long enough for the sun to rise fully in the sky, and still he hadn't returned. Too nervous to wait any longer, I set off down the trail to look for him, hoping I'd find him along the way. Perhaps he had decided to stop and rest, and then fallen asleep instead. He was far too old to be making that climb up to the cave as often as he did, especially carrying heavy supplies. Too old for a lot of things. But I couldn't imagine what I'd do without him. If I came across him, I could wake him up and help him carry his sacks and bags up to the cave. Maybe even carry him if he'd allow it. I could almost imagine his slow, kind smile as he opened his eyes and saw me. I did find him at the bottom of the trail, but Grimora would never open his eyes and smile at me again. He'd been dead for hours. Maybe he'd died during the night, and that accounted for my horrible feeling of impending doom. I suppose it must have been natural causes. There were no marks on his body, but I still roared with pain and grief and shook my fist at the indifferent sky. And then, because I couldn't control my anger, I began running toward the village, wanting to take out my rage and my hurt on something, someone. I thought they must have hurt him somehow. I relished the reception I'd find there. I hoped they'd fight me. I wanted to destroy the place and lay waste to the entire village, kill every man in it, and dance in his blood. I wanted to squeeze the neck of the village's head man until his eyes bugged out and his head popped off. I could practically feel the crunch of his bones beneath my fingers. I don't know how long it took me to arrive. Minutes? Hours? Days? I don't know if I would have really done anything at all, or if I was just blowing off steam. Grimora wouldn't have liked it if I had. But as I topped a rise and looked down on the village below, I was stunned to see that it already lay in ruins. All the houses were burned to the ground, their timbers smoldering in the waning sunlight. Animals lay in their pens, blood streaming from spear wounds in their necks. Smoke drifted across the village or hung over parts of it in a pall, and the bloody, blackened bodies of men, women, and even children were sprawled in the dirt. Appalled and shaken, I fell to my knees and retched. I'd been so furious and full of rage toward these people, but I hadn't really wanted anything like this. Never this. This had been a sickening massacre. Who could have imagined this, let alone carried out such a horror? And for the gods' sake, why? The answer came to me as clearly as if the wicked, murdering bitch had been standing beside me. To pin the blame on you, of course. That's why the village was destroyed. She knows somehow that you're still alive. She's found out you're not dead yet, and she wants you to get the blame for this. In that instant, I knew who must have committed this atrocity. The same wicked, evil bitch who destroyed me and my entire family. It was Rosamond, the evil queen of Morovia.
Chapter 1. Asher. Queen Rosamond was dead. She had died suddenly, and the shocking news had reached us last evening, just as we'd sat down to dinner. There had been a loud banging at the door, with the dogs running to hurl their bodies against it, going wild with barking and making an awful noise. It had caused me to spring from my chair and grab for my sword, while Wyatt pushed his Omega Darcy behind him in alarm. We approached the door with our weapons in hand, ready for anything, but we only found King Harrison's messenger, sent urgently to inform us of the disaster that had befallen our king's consort. Rosamond had also been set to inherit the throne of Sadfarma following her father's recent death, but to my knowledge, she hadn't yet been coronated. Now, she never would be. From what the messenger told us, she had been riding with her entourage early that morning on a trail she'd taken hundreds of times before. It was her custom to ride every morning, and this morning had been no exception. There had been a storm the night before, but the weather had cleared during the night, and it was sunny and beautiful when she rode out of the palace grounds. It was common knowledge that she always enjoyed a good hunt after breakfast, chasing foxes and watching her dogs first corner and then tear them apart was just the thing to put her in a good mood and start her day. But this time, as the dogs chased the hapless fox down the trail, a huge limb from a massive oak tree, which had been damaged during the storm the night before, had suddenly snapped with a loud crack and fallen right on top of Queen Rosamond and two of her courtiers, killing all three of them instantly. The survivors of the hunting party had recovered her body, along with the others, and the queen had been taken back to the palace, where her body now lay in state in the royal chapel, awaiting the funeral that would take place in a few days. King Harrison had sent us a request to attend him right away.
"I'm sorry for Harrison, but I can't say I'm sorry to see her gone,"
Wyatt said.
"She was an awful woman. Harrison hasn't known any real happiness since he met her."
"I feel the same way about her after what she did to Rory, but she was still Harrison's queen. We need to support him if we can."
"Was she really such a bad person?"
Darcy asked, easing himself down on a chair by the fire as he joined us. He was almost 6 months pregnant with his and Wyatt's first child. "Imagine the most unpleasant person you know or ever heard of. Then double that," I said, and Wyatt laughed and nodded. "True," I said. Darcy turned to me.
"But why would Harrison ever marry such a terrible woman?"
"It's hard to say. He must have had his reasons and thought it was a good idea at the time. He wanted trade routes to improve the economy here in Morovia, and they were desperately needed at the time. Her father made him an offer of an alliance that entailed Harrison marrying Rosamond in return for Morovia use of the Sudfarman ports. I think he came to regret it soon after the marriage, but he was too decent to ever say a word against her, and he tried hard to respect his marriage vows. Mostly, he spent as much time as he could away from the palace." There was no question of whether or not we'd have to attend the funeral, even though Harrison's entire family had despised the queen. So had his pack, namely us, or what was left of us, now that Lex and Brandon had married their partners and moved away. I wondered if Lex would even show up, but in the end, I knew he would, if only for his brother's sake. He'd hate every second of it, but he'd be there. Our pack was scattered now, with Lex Inigella acting as regent for his Omega Rory, and Brandon having run off with the notorious pirate Roxbury. They were probably living by now in Gilead, the pirate's island in the north. Brandon kept insisting he would eventually come back to Morovia and live on his family's estate, but I had my doubts. Roxbury could be very persuasive when he set his mind to it. Wyatt and I talked it over, and we decided we should head out first thing in the morning to be with Harrison. Darcy would stay home because Wyatt was a control freak, and Darcy was still experiencing quite a bit of sickness in the mornings.
That was common for Omega male pregnancies, but this baby was far too important to both of them to risk anything happening. We set out early the next morning and made good time to Thalia, the capital city of Morovia, riding hard and making it there by the afternoon. We went immediately to the palace and were shown to Harrison's private quarters. We found him sitting by the fire, drinking blood-red wine from an ornate goblet. An ancient-looking lady, with her white wigs piled elegantly high on her head, was sitting in the chair opposite him. He glanced up when we came in, his eyes glittering with tears, and gave us a sad smile.
"Thank you for coming. I need my friends and brothers around me."
He gestured to the lady, who rose to her feet to curtsy to us.
"This is Lady Rochella, who was always a good friend to Rosamond."
We bowed to her, and she smiled at us and curtsied again.
"I'll take my leave now, Your Majesty. I just wanted to personally express my deepest condolences."
"Thank you, Lady Rochella."
She went toward the door with Wyatt accompanying her to open it and see her out. As soon as the door closed behind her, Harrison sagged in his chair.
"They've been coming all morning. Courtiers, ladies-in-waiting, old friends, one after another. It's been exhausting."
He reached up and laid a hand on my arm.
"Thank you again for coming so quickly."
"Of course," I said, sitting down next to him.
"We're sorry for your loss. Tell us how we can help."
"I'm afraid there's nothing to be done. The priests have all the arrangements in hand. Her younger brother, Prince Chandler, is on his way from Sudvarma. I suppose I should call him King Chandler now,
if indeed there is an investiture in a few days' time. The council has to approve it first, along with his husband Kelman as a regent. Chandler has assured me he'll keep all the treaties with Morovia in place, but that really depends on his regent."
"The priest he married?"
"Yes. He's not popular with the council or the Sudvarman people, so the council may surprise us and name a new heir. I believe there are several contenders. Alfred was like the old king, his father, Hendrik. When he was young, Alfred was known for spreading his seed all over the court, even with the ladies-in-waiting. Alfred had many illegitimate children, so there should be plenty stepping forward."
"Unless you think this might be a good time to stake your own claim to Sudvarma, we stand ready to back you on that."
He shrugged. "Perhaps. I have no real basis for that. It will be a couple of weeks before the council meets to decide anything, and I find it hard to think about all that now."
"Time to think about it later, then. You're still grieving now," I said, meaning to comfort him. It had the opposite effect. He looked up at me with real pain in his dark eyes.
"That's just it, Asher. I should be grieving. But I don't feel anything. Not really."
He put his forehead in his hand.
"I was married to her for years. I should feel something."
"She was a difficult person, Harrison. We all knew that. You were a good husband to her."
He shook his head and said nothing else for a while. We sat with him and tried to get him to eat something. I knew what he was feeling was guilt for not loving his wife. But then again, she had been a really hard person to love, and never seemed to care all that much for Harrison either. He never should have married her, but regrets and recriminations didn't help anyone. He'd made mistakes, and now he had to suffer the consequences. But it didn't have to ruin his life. We'd make sure he'd be all right. We sat with him all afternoon until Prince Chandler arrived, and we withdrew then so they could have some privacy. We had just made it to the guest rooms we'd been assigned when we saw Lexington coming down the white corridor toward us. I'd known he was coming from Aegella, and I was glad to see him, even though it had only been a few weeks since we'd all had the adventure together with the pirates.
"Rory didn't come?"
Wyatt asked, and Lex shook his head.
"No, he just couldn't. This place still terrifies him, even with the queen gone now, and I can understand why."
Rosamond and the priests had tried their best to kill him, that was why. And they had entombed him alive. So I understand his feelings. The fact that Lex was here was a testament to how close he was to his brother, and nothing else. I suspected he wouldn't stay long, and he soon proved me right.
I have to leave right after the funeral. I'll stay long enough for the funeral, and then I'm out of here. I was actually hoping you and Wyatt would go back to Igella with me when I leave. You're Omega Darcy too, of course, Wyatt. The roads are much improved in Igella since I've taken over, so the trips over in a carriage shouldn't be bad at all.
What's going on?
There's been an attack a couple of days ago on one of the villages in the west, near the Lorien Sea. Everyone was slaughtered. It was a terrible thing.
An attack? By what country?
Not a country. Actually, the rumors say it was a monster.
A monster? What kind of monster? That's crazy, Harrison. There's no such thing.
I would have agreed with you not long ago, but I'm afraid the stories about Banshira are at least partially true. I remember Brandon telling us about him. He and Roxbury stayed in his cave for a while.
What? Wyatt exclaimed. I never heard about all this.
Yes, you did. But you were too busy fighting with Roxbury to pay any attention. According to the legends, his name is Banshira, and he's a big, hairy creature who supposedly lives in a cave by the sea with an old wizard named Cremora. When Roxbury came to find Brandon, they told me about him. Roxbury said Cremora told him that, in his opinion, he wasn't really a demonic monster at all, but just a man who had a strange illness. Or he was possibly under some kind of spell. He was forced from his home because of it, and Cremora found him in the woods all alone and half-starved over 10 years ago. He was only a child at the time.
So he's not really a monster? Wyatt said.
No, not unless the stories the survivors of the massacre told us are true. They claim it was definitely Banshira who attacked with a horde of demons, even slaughtered all the animals.
An entire horde of demons? Really?
That's the story the survivors told anyway. I doubt they're strictly true.
No, I said. I would think not.
But there are those who believe it. And now they're clamoring for me to do something about it and save Igella. They're convinced he's going to go on some kind of rampage and killing spree throughout the kingdom.
Wyatt laughed.
So you thought it would be a good idea for me to take my pregnant Omega there to be killed and eaten by a monster? I don't think so.
Lexington laughed and turned to me.
What about you then, Asher? Are you up for a little monster hunting?
Why not? I said, grinning at him. Sounds like a good time to me. He clapped me on the shoulder and nodded.
Good. It'll be like old times. We'll leave as soon as this funeral is over, and as soon as we can decently get away. That can't be too soon for me.
We did leave soon after the funeral, but it wasn't quite as soon as Lex wanted. As always seemed to happen when a person is anxious to be on their way somewhere, one thing after another caused little delays. Finally, however, Queen Rosamond was prayed over sufficiently by her priests and safely entombed in the main cathedral near the palace, the same church whose aisles we had once searched with lanterns in the middle of the night, frantically trying to find the tomb where they'd put Rory's body. It was late afternoon by the time we left, but we both wanted to be on our way from that place. We said goodbye to Harrison and Wyatt and took our leave. We only made it as far as an inn on the outskirts of town, but it was still better than the oppressive atmosphere that still hung over the palace. Personally, I thought Harrison needed to burn some sage around the palace, just to be on the safe side, but Lexington advised me to keep that idea to myself. I had long heard the rumors about Rosamond secretly practicing the dark arts, though to hear her tell it, she was a good, God-fearing woman, who abhorred and hated all dark magic.
I didn't buy it. Lex and I had a lot of magic ourselves, and we had both sensed something terribly wrong with Rosamond. She always managed to make herself scarce when we were around, which wasn't all that often. I could smell the magic on her if I got too close. I knew she used heavy wards to hide herself, and I should have done more work to look into it. But she was Harrison's queen, and he didn't want our interference. I still thought she should have been brought to trial for what she'd done to Rory. Perhaps then her dark secrets might have come out. But Lex didn't pursue it because he loved his brother, and the estrangement between them had only gotten worse in the meantime. Maybe that massive tree limb falling on her head was a little divine justice at work. Years before she married Harrison, I'd heard stories about how she dealt with those she considered enemies in her own country. Many people had opposed her father taking the throne years ago, and some said he was a usurper, and he was not even the legitimate heir. I didn't know all the details of that story, but his detractors and any other contenders for the throne disappeared one after another, until he was the only one left standing. Rosamond would have been only a teenager at the time, as she had been in her late 20s when she had her unfortunate accident. Some of those stories of what happened to those people who opposed her father, if true, were chilling and a little hard to believe. As for Lex, he said it wasn't hard for him to believe every bad story we heard about her. But then, his hatred for the late queen was well known, and very well deserved.
Chapter 2. Bansheera, once known as Leo. I arrived back at the cave feeling drained and devastated by all that had happened in such a short time. I had to decide how best to bury Grimora, but in the end, I couldn't bear to think of putting him in the cold ground. He always hated being cold. I built a funeral pyre of driftwood I gathered from the beach, along with some branches from the forest, and draped his best wizard robes over his body. Then I lit the small pyre at sunset and stayed near it most of the night, feeding it wood for fuel. In the morning, I'd scatter his ashes in the sea and then end it all myself, because I'd wanted to for years, and only Grimora had stopped me in the past. Besides, without Grimora, I didn't think I could bear the loneliness. But first, I'd finish what I started for Grimora's sake, and then climb up to the cave and throw myself off the ledge and be done with this painful life I had lived for far too long. But when I went to check the fire, I could see his skeleton still mostly intact up under the wood. I had no idea what to do with that, so I did what I usually did. Nothing at all, except to worry about it. I sat up half the night by the smoldering coals on the beach, trying to decide what to do next, and I thought about Grimora. I remembered the day Grimora and I met, though most of my memories of that day are dim and clouded. If I had expected a quick death, and I was sadly mistaken. I had wanted only to die. That witch had laid a wicked spell on me, turning me into a monster, an ugly, ridiculous, hairy creature with claws and teeth. Why had she done it? She'd been trying for my father. But I had seen her slip the powder into his cup, and I had dashed forward to drink it before he could. A foolish thing to do, perhaps, but I loved my father very much, and brave, noble, foolhardy acts were what little boys lived for and dreamed about. I also thought my father could save me, because I thought he could do anything. But he died before he got the chance. My father and I had been close that last couple of years before his death. By then, my mother had retreated into her own world and had little time for either of us. He knew I had magic inside me, but until I got my full growth, he didn't know how much or how potent it might be. I think he did know enough to know it was different from his, however. He first tried to teach me from his many books, but the pages would stick when I tried to turn them and refused to show themselves to me, and the words danced around on the page and wouldn't lie still for me to read them. Once, when I was looking for something new to read,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?